Welcome to Small Town Radio, the show with the biggest facts about the smallest towns. I am your host, Maxim.
And I am your host, Connor.
Ooh.
It's a big day.
It is bright and early on Saturday morning that we are recording this.
It is early. What is it, like 3 a.m.?
No, it's 8:30. It's 8:30 in the morning, which is very early, though. I went to bed at 1.
I've been sleeping so much recently. I feel like I've been averaging close to 10 hours a day. It's been really wild.
Wow.
So yeah, it's kind of early for me too. I went to bed, you know, around that time as well. Well, it's good. It's nice. Wow. Do you know what I could have used? More sleep. Do you know where we're headed?
Yeah, so
more.
Today we are going to a town that was suggested by a listener named John Chafin, who this is his hometown of Moorhead, Kentucky. And in his email he said, here's my hometown, love the and then he said, as my daddy used to say, quote, if I can't get better head, I guess I'll live with more head. Love the show. So thanks, John, for sending this in. We appreciate it a lot.
The transition I was hoping for was more sleep. Nah, just more head. Do you know John?
No.
I don't know him either. This is wild.
This is a remarkable moment in our podcast history.
I feel like each time we've had someone suggest a town, we've more or less pulled teeth or known them for at least 3 years.
Yeah. It's someone that is associated with us usually. So this is a good milestone.
This is milestone 14.
Milestone 14?
Oh. Yeah. How's your life been? What's going on here?
It's exhausting. I'm I have to move out.
Oh yeah, that's
again.
That's end of this month?
The middle.
The middle of the month. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So that's like 10 days or so.
Yep, 10 days.
That's frustrating. Moving is one of my least favorite hobbies.
Oh my god, it's awful. It's so bad.
Yeah, I mean, you have all these small towns to choose from, though, so.
Yeah, exactly, yep. I'm going to move from Brooklyn to somewhere in the middle of nowhere in Kansas.
Might as well. What's that place? Was it Gatlinburg, Tennessee?
Yeah.
That place. High on my list. I mean, think about it. It's wild. That was a place with more activities than people.
Yeah, you'd have so much to do there. You'd be so occupied with roller coasters and whatever.
We talked a little bit
for you.
How's it's been interesting. This week's been a big push. I feel like there's something brewing with this direct to audience comedy, and that I'd like to figure more out of. I'm also like getting more and more interested in the idea of booking, and like continuing to grow my set. So things have been good. We had a few public shows since we last recorded. It's always nice to have a public show. It's interesting to see how much we raise in donations at public shows versus private shows. I think that's something that's been very interesting, but comedy's been going well. Getting in public spaces has been a nice reminder where, like, when you need to compete with people's attention, because we haven't really had that. I haven't had to deal with that in a little bit. So it was good. That type of stuff was really good. But living situation's good. Just had my fantasy football draft, you know.
Nice.
What else? Oh, I redid my entire website. You can head to ConnorKvierchain.com to check that out. I've launched another podcast, not quite in the same capacity that you have, because yours is like gung-ho, top line, cool interviews. Mine's like, I feel like there's something that's brewing in comedy and I want to document it. Zero promotion for it. It's really an attachment that goes with my mailing list now, with show information and other creative endeavors to try and continue to keep people updated. So it's a little bit of marketing, an idea that I've been toying with. But yeah, yesterday, I made my website public and put that podcast out, a trailer for that podcast out. Podcast is called What's Up With Me. Surprisingly, there were no podcasts with that name. Like, very weird.
Wow, I'm surprised.
It was like the first idea that popped into my head, and I was like, maybe, but I feel like that's got to be out there. Apparently not. So,
yeah, there are like four podcasts with my other podcast name of Don't Quit Your Day Job.
Yeah, what do you think? I know you put out a poll, and I responded, and I'm like, I don't know. Are you? Because it depends on what the goal of the whole thing is. Are you thinking, where are you leaning right now?
I think I'm going to keep the name, because I think if I'm consistent and just keep putting it out, like, mine will become the dominant Don't Quit Your Day Job podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I kind of feel, too. It's like, as long as it's not, like, a BuzzFeed or a Vice or, like, a big network that you're competing with, it doesn't really matter all that much.
Right.
I have checked
and
it out.
My cover art is way sicker than all the other ones. So
yeah, that's what matters. Especially when you can rub it in their faces on a separate podcast that you do.
Yeah.
That's nice. It's good. Actually, do you know, not to plug someone else's, but you know Luc Gaston? I believe that's his last name.
Yeah,
he put out one as well. And recently, it feels like every comedian with some extra time right now is putting out a podcast. But he's been very interesting, because he had a booker on his show, and that's what really opened my eyes. I'm like, wait, that's kind of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Booking. Maybe I should read about it.
Maybe I should learn about this thing that directly applies to my life.
Yeah, I mean, the update with curbside comedy and why it's been so, good and interesting as an experience is we just surpassed raising more than $4,000 for charity, which is nuts. And like, why I feel like right now is a good time to start taking some ownership of that narrative and like telling people how it came about and think about different ways to get comedy to people, especially in a time where it's going to become more difficult this winter as the pandemic continues on. So I just want to kind of document and see where it goes.
Yeah, it's going to be real difficult in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing where, like, for you're talking about a move, I might be doing another move, and that's something I don't know, I've talked with you about. I don't know if I've talked to the podcast about, but it may, like, I don't know. I got a good feeling that I can make something work while continuing to perform and getting better as a comedian. I just need to figure out the logistics and the marketing and like how to make it happen. So,
yeah.
Could be cool. I mean, imagine getting 30 minutes all winter, a couple nights a week.
That'd be great. I could go up and bomb for 30 minutes. No.
It's just been like this whole thing. Like, I used to have jokes, like little jokey jokes. And now I have like bits, like beefy bits. And I'm not like writing lines as much anymore. Like, I don't know, I feel like I've really started to take ownership of some of the most embarrassing and personal moments of my life, things that I wouldn't share, which has kind of been empowering.
That's awesome.
In a lot of ways. So
no, yeah. That's great. I mean, that's what having a ton of time will do to you. you get a lot of chance to breathe and like grow in your humor.
Yeah, I did 6 minutes the other night too. That was a new challenge again. But
wait till you do 2.5 again.
Yeah, and oh my God, I would. Nope. I'm sorry. Unless it's an audition for something, then I need to rewrite everything anyway if I had to do 2 minutes. But yeah, that's where my life's been at.
Nice.
We can remind people, rate this show 5 stars. 5. FIVE stars. You can also put that as a review of the podcast wherever you're listening. Subscribe wherever you're listening. And you can follow us on Instagram at STRadioPod or send us town suggestions at smalltownradiopodcast@gmail.com. Much like John, thank you again, John, for your town suggestion. Other than that, just continue to listen.
Listening, continuing now.
Thank you. I would say the name of a device that would respond, but I don't want to respond while we're recording, so.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I hate those fucking things. Okay. So today we're going to Moorhead, Kentucky, which was suggested by John Chafin, once again. Moorhead, Kentucky is a home rule class city in Rowan County, northeastern Kentucky. Elevation, 738 feet. Population, 7,562 as of 2019.
It's kind of proportional. I like that. And it's been growing, too. Not an elevation in population. It was 6,845 in 2010. And is it Rowan, or how you said it a different way?
I mean, Rowan, Rowan, whatever.
Yeah, it's
Rowan.
Yeah, it's I'll tackle the I'll tackle the history of it, but I have some things I need to share about today. Like 100%.
Okay. All right. Do your thing.
Okay, I'll try and do both here. I'll start with the history, and this is I want to point out, you know, a small town has made it when you Google it and its town website has come up before Wikipedia. That's like a sign of a town that's doing something right. And that is what Moorhead did. So shout out to you. I feel like that is worth pointing out because I'd say it's about 1 in 5 small towns have that.
Yeah.
It's very uncommon.
Very few.
But some of the history, this is the history straight from the horse's mouth. I think that's a saying, which is Wikipedia. So the first European settlers came to Rowan County from Virginia following the end of the American Revolutionary War in 1783. In 1854, Moorhead became the third community to be settled in the county, which means that was a fairly long amount of time. Between moving to the county and settling there. But Colonel John Hargis founded the city after purchasing the land in the area. And don't worry, it is a home rule city, so it's one of those, you know, kind of a town, maybe. The city was named after James T. Moorhead, a politician who served as governor of Kentucky from 1834 to 1836. Rowan County came into existence in May of 1856, ceding from parts of Morgan County and Fleming County. It was divided into 4 districts, with Moorhead being declared the county seat. The formation of Rowan County was a political ploy to prevent Flemingsburg from moving its seat to Poplar Plains, and Moorhead was selected as Rowan seat because of its centrality. Although it's smaller and less developed than neighboring towns of Farmers, which is the name of a town, not the people who live there, it remained a significant city in the county due to its status as county seat. It officially became incorporated in 1869. So today, Moorhead, of course, has Moorhead State, and the city has invested, or as Wikipedia put it, ameliorated, great word, Wikipedia, the natural areas, including Cave Run Lake, the largest lake in eastern Kentucky, Maxim, this one's for you. Cave Run Lake is also known as the musky capital of the South.
Yeah, I saw that and I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, that's. I feel like that's not necessarily a compliment.
What is musky?
Like a musk. You got a. It's a musky smell. That's what I'm assuming.
I feel like that's. It's just not. I think it means something else.
It might be. Are you looking it up now? Because I'll withhold the next thing I'm going to say just because it's so great.
A musky is a fish.
Oh, that's less exciting.
It's a magnificent leaping fish which grows to over 50 inches.
Okay, that's more exciting. That's like a cartoon fish. The top three things to do in Moorhead County, Moorhead, the city of Moorhead, according to TripAdvisor, is go to Cave Run Lake. That's number one. Number two, Kentucky Folk Art Center. And number three, Maxim. Number three, the third thing to do in Moorhead is go to the Home for Wayward Baby Dolls.
Wait, what? I missed
yes,
this
one. I don't
one.
Know if you saw this, and that's why I wanted to, like, go to TripAdvisor, type in Moorhead, and look at the top three things. The home for wayward baby dolls. I have this article that I found. I want to pull up, I just want to make sure to.
Oh, I don't like this.
Yeah, it's. Address. I want to make sure the address is in the town. Maps. Yeah, why didn't you just pull up maps? It's not coming up on the maps, but it's on TripAdvisor, and this is what it. Here's what the home of wayward baby dolls is, according to this article from the Courier Journal titled. Welcome to the Home for Wayward Baby Dolls, a creepy resting place for disregarded toys. I'll give you the first few paragraphs here. Deep in the hills of eastern Kentucky, there's a mysterious place where plastic baby dolls live out their final days. Nature takes its course at this comfortable county home, country home, where hound dogs roam free and decapitated doll heads litter picket fences. Each doll at the home has been abandoned, some abused, others are shot full of bullet holes. Some even might be possessed. Now they rest in peace, decaying away in trees, cages, and box springs at the home for wayward baby dolls. The home is the work of Cecil R. Eisen, a folk artist and, quote, mad scientist, and his wife, Bette. Eisen's official title is the director of the International Assembly of Forensic Anthropomorphologist, which is a study of human-like objects. Eisen's specialty, hard plastic bodies.
Oh my god. It's so weird.
Yeah,
so
I was doing research on the other like big historical fact in the area, and I was like, let's just see one like what else is going on in modern day. And I just could not believe it. I like called my roommates into my room, started sharing this information. I was very distracted in the research once I found this.
Quite a find.
Yeah, the home for wayward baby dolls. I'll read the next paragraph, too, just because it's weird. So Eisen, in 68, first began noticing discarded dolls in the wilderness while working as an archaeologist at the Daniel Boone National Forest. He carried them back to his office, curious about their past and how they met their demise. The Daniel Boone National Forest isn't part of like the natural area that Moorhead ameliorated. And wow, just wow.
Oh yeah, it reminds me of there's a episode of And That's Why We Drink, and they talk about this haunted place called the Island of the Dolls in Mexico. And it's like a little island, and there was a little girl that drowned, and then like nearby, And then one day a doll floated down the river, and this dude was like, oh, this must be the spirit of the little girl. So he put it on the island, like where he lived. And then dolls just started coming downstream like a lot more, and he started collecting all of them. And now it's just like a little island in this river that's just covered in haunted dolls. Mm-mm.
I do want to clarify, now that I've gone to the Facebook page, it is in Elliottville, Kentucky, even though TripAdvisor has it home on the page for Moorhead. So you get some breathing room, but it's still associated with you on the internet, and that's what matters for this show.
It's close enough.
Do you want to take the next fact here?
Yeah, so I guess my big fact here is that in the 1880s, Moorhead became the center stage for a notorious conflict known as the Rowan County War of the Martin-Tolliver-Logan feud. During a number of skirmishes, at least 20 people were killed and possibly 100 were wounded. Beginning with an election day barroom brawl, several gunfights took place in Moorhead and the surrounding countryside. Eventually, a group led by Craig Tolliver seized political control of the town and installed allies in the county sheriff's and county attorney's offices, as well as the office of the town marshal. Several members of the opposing faction were arrested on trumped-up charges, and some were killed when the faction power falsely claimed they had resisted arrest. The conflict gained national attention, and on two occasions, the government sent troops to maintain order with little effect. Eventually, a posse of as many as 100 individuals were organized and armed by Daniel Boone Logan with the consent of Governor J. Proctor Knott and Governor-elect Simon Buckner. In a dramatic two-hour gun battle in the center of the town, several of the Tollivers were killed, and the Tolliver's control of the county was broken. Two men were later acquitted for the murder of Craig Tolliver, and Moorhead University was established as an indirect result of the feud. After the state militia came to settle the feud, the Disciples of Christ established a church and a school which served as the forerunner to the university. So this was a long read, so I just put the kind of quick synopsis, but basically, there was two feuding factions in this town, and they each backed a political candidate for, like, mayor, basically, or, like, governor. And one was Republican, one was Democrat, and I forgot who was who, but one of them, like, attacked the other one during the election night, like, at a public event. And then they just kind of broke into, like, Democrat versus Republican factions, and they just, like, battled it out for, like, 3 years or something like that.
It was, I watched a YouTube video trying to understand the whole thing, and it was very convoluted, like, but the way it started was, well, bars were open on election day, so people were drinking, and, you know, they had a few, started with a fish fight, and then started throwing rocks, and then a couple people were shot. And we're like, whoa,
yep.
Whoa. I do want to point out, though, you said the governor and the governor-elect were in agreement on something. What a time in American history.
Rare. So rare.
It was really complicated, because it was like, oh, sorry, my, I got a notification sound. Like, it was this two families, there are two families that were feuding, and then one won the battle, but then another family got implicated in some way, and the different relative took on, and it was just like this whole thing, and then it seems like it just dissipated with time.
It was. Yeah, it just kind of settled down after a while.
Which is the hope for a war in a county. I wanted to share a fact which I misread, and when I read it, I was more pleased, because we always talk about trains.
Yeah.
And so in Moorhead, one of the first transcontinental auto trails in the U.S. Was made, and it was called the Midland Trail. It was connected to Moorhead in 1929. And when I first read it, I thought it said auto trains, transcontinental auto trains in the U.S. And I was like, ooh, an example of a town that got a train that didn't get huge, because Moorhead also has some shipping capabilities. Like, it was a hub earlier on in its days for big. It was a. I don't think it was exactly a port town, but it had some connection.
Yeah, I have no idea. I forgot where. I didn't see any rivers nearby. I didn't look that close.
The what was it? But yeah, because it said that the industry improved in the early 1920s. It was considered an import shipping center in the region. On Wikipedia here, but I was thinking trains here, city didn't blow up. But when I reread it, and I said, oh, cars all make sense. Trains are bust. That's it.
Yeah.
Trains are bust. That's the other thing. And you see too that there was a decent fire?
No, how did I miss all these? I thought I read the whole article.
It was down in like the, it was like below the demographics information. You know, there's nothing good usually below the demographics information.
Yeah, yeah.
and I want to point out, we haven't had a good town, small town burning in a while. That was like a staple of the show for months. But in July 1939, a number of businesses and hotels located in Main Street were caught in a raging fire following Independence Day, July 4th, for people who don't know. Celebrations, which went awry. The town's Pack Horse Library Center was burned down as well. Only 24 hours afterwards, the town was badly affected by flash flooding. At least 25 people died, and thousands had to receive vaccinations for typhoid fever. So you're kind of a twofer.
Oh, my God.
It's like, go back and listen to the first 30 episodes of this podcast. I'm guessing about 20 of them had fires that just destroyed their town. Some had multiple, yeah. But I want to point out this thing called, excuse me, the Pack Horse Library Project that was burnt down. And what the Pack Horse Library was a book delivery program in the Appalachian Mountains region between 1935 and 1943. Women were very involved in the project, which eventually had 30 different libraries serving 100,000 people. Pack Horse librarians were also known by many different names, including book women, book ladies, pack saddle librarians, to name a few. And the project employed around 200 people and again reached about 100,000 residents in rural Kentucky. So basically, this was a program that started in the state, but the tycoon who funded it passed away, and someone said, hey, I want to pick up the project. And eventually the Works Progress Administration helped fund it. But in Eastern Kentucky, there was a lot of rural areas, and it had a very high illiteracy rate, but we couldn't get libraries to the places. Yet people saw education as a way for betterment and getting out of their situation. So basically, these people got on horses and delivered books, which is amazing. And unfortunately, it burnt down. I don't know if
all the books burned down with the rest of the town.
But when I read it, I was like, how are the horses? Like, that's what I wanted to know. It's like, is this a library of horses? You come in and you go, oh, I'd like to read about the brown one. And they're like, okay, here's the horse.
Every horse can only carry one book in its mouth. So they have to bring 1,000 horses to every spot.
Yeah. Good fire burning. Do you have more facts? Well, bad fire. No facts are good. No fire burnings are good when they burn stuff down. But It's a staple. It's a staple of small towns.
Yeah. Okay, so we mentioned earlier, Morehead is home to Morehead State University. The university began as Morehead Normal School, with a capital N, which opened its doors in 1887. One student appeared on the first day of class in October 1887 in a little rented cottage where Adron Doran University Center now stands. The private school closed in spring of 1922 when the Kentucky General Assembly established Morehead State Normal School. The state institution accepted its first students in the fall of 1923 and graduated its first class in 1927. And notable alumni? I didn't recognize any of them, but this guy, Chuck Woolery, was the original Wheel of Fortune host.
Oh, Wheel of Fortune! Should have been Wheel of Normal.
Yeah, I don't know what the normal school thing is.
One person shows up. Yeah, I'm the only normal one here. That's why I'm here.
What are you going to do about it, weirdos?
Like the student's parents made it. Like, no, look, our son is normal. It's okay. We've just been telling you, now we have proof. Only normal one here.
Or he's learning to be normal.
I feel like if you're the only one who's normal, then you're not normal. Because norm is the average of people, right?
Yeah.
There's some more abstract standards, but really, at the end of the day, normal, it's an average.
Yeah. Okay, so I have one more tiny one.
Okay.
This is like a news piece that's not so great.
Oh, yeah. I get to say, 2015, the only fact in the 20s?
Yeah.
The 20th century? 21st
yeah,
century?
So this happened in 2015, and yeah. If the other facts did not seal Morehead into your memory, this will, because Morehead gained national attention when Kim Davis denied a federal court order requiring that, as clerk of Rowan County, she issue a marriage license to a same-sex couple.
Yep, that was the thing. That's why I was so pleased when I found the home of Wayward Baby Dolls, because I was like, man, this is not good. To have your only fact being something that bad, like, that's not great. That's
no, it's not
no,
good.
That's like a nice way of saying it. Not great is a very generous way. But yeah, that was the only fact under the 21st century, which, like, let's change that. Let's get some more facts. Let's reopen the normal school.
Yeah, normal schools. Do you have any sponsors today?
I do. Yeah. That's my sponsor. I do.
Oh.
When you're out of words to say at a wedding, just say I do.
Or I don't.
Just say, ew, no, thank you.
Ew, no, thank you.
Would you like the seat? Ew, no, thank you. Would you like to be married? Ew, no, thank you. How about you? No, thank you. Well, at least you're in agreement upon something.
Imagine paying $20,000 for a wedding just to say, ew, no, thank you, when you're doing your vows.
Challenge accepted.
Oh,
how about you?
Oh, God. Today I'm sponsored by sleep. Make sure you're getting enough of it.
Yeah.
All right. It's time for our favorite, the highlight of the century and the millennium, the Goblin Gallery.
You know where this should be?
What?
Morehead's Wikipedia page for 21st century.
There you go.
Do you, I'll start it off. That's okay. Yeah?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Here, in my Goblin Gallery, hung upon the wall, is an open letter to the Packhorse Library Project. Dear Packhorse Library Project, I love you. I know I don't know you that well, but I love you. And yes, it is romantic. Some may say I've only known you for maybe an hour of research. But who are we kidding? There's no way I spent more than 20 minutes researching you. And I doubt you've researched me at all, since you're an animate figment of history. But I knew as soon as I saw your name, this must be it. True romantic love. You're like the sexy cousin of the Pony Express. But instead of delivering taxes and paper advertisements for local grocers, farmers, and I'm assuming better towns, you deliver books. And boy, I love telling people and having people think that I read a lot because it sounds intellectual. The truth is, I'm more of a casual reader. I love you as an idea, and I need you like I need a baby doll in my house. Sincerely, Dreamboat.
Ooh, nice.
The initial letter says, I need you like I need a baby doll on my fence, but I forgot to mention that the article that I read about the Wayward Baby Doll House, the picture, and I'll show you, Maxim, on my screen here.
Okay.
The picture here is quite literally a baby doll head on a fence.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's eerie.
Yep. But I realized I didn't say that, so it would have been really weird and out of place, so...
All right, so for today's Goblin Gallery, I have a campus brochure.
Oh.
Goblin State University is a well-recognized institution of higher learning located under the beautiful Misty Mountains. GSU is a world-class university right in your backyard. Our students learn from inspiring goblin leaders from across the realm in a variety of subjects. Our staff includes Griphook, formerly of Gringotts Wizarding Bank, teaches economics. The Green Goblin is the head of engineering and our athletics department. Papa Smurf as chair of the Goblanities.
Smurfs are goblins?
According to Wikipedia, they're goblin adjacent. I was trying to think of famous goblins. And finally, the CGI Goblin King from The Hobbit as head of culinary. Our incoming students may be green when they arrive, but they will soon be well-versed in one of many goblin subjects with the following degrees. Bachelor of Science in Dying in Combat. Bachelor of Arts in Cooking Children. The BBA, Business Bachelor's something? I can't remember the acronym. Anyway, a business degree in lurking under bridges. And finally, a Bachelor of Science in Ramshackle Engineering. And finally, a Bachelor of Arts in Small Town Facts. Schedule a campus visit today.
I like how the business degree is lurking under bridges, so that way someone comes up and goes, what are you doing? None of your business.
Oh, it's the Bachelor of Business Administration. That's what BBA is. Yeah.
Also, I like how there's goblin adjacency. Like, that should, I feel like that's got to be on there. How to not be, you're not a goblin, but you're close enough.
Yeah, they're trying to be more inclusive as a campus.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. I do. Okay, I'll point this out. I will point this out because we said inclusivity. On the Moorhead Town website, you go there, at the top it says, diversity and inclusion, and there's a fairness ordinance and the mayor's book. Like, I didn't, you know, there's that. I wanted to, I guess I'll put that out there for that town. But yeah, I feel like there was a good balance of history and present, well, not from Wikipedia, but some present day things with the baby doll heads in the area. But yeah.
They got some good stuff.
They got some good stuff. Moorhead State.
Thanks again, John Chafin.
Yeah. We appreciate it.
I will have Moorhead. Thank you.
I feel like that's a thing that served at the Goblin School. Goblin State.
Mm-hmm.
Moorhead, please. What is it? Baby doll heads.
Oh, I should have riffed that one. Just be like a Bachelor of Arts in doll sculpting.
It's the goblins who have littered the forest with baby dolls.
Yeah, probably. Probably. All right, guys. Well, that's all we got for today. You know where to follow us and hit us up. Also, check out Don't Quit Your Day Job. Thank you for listening. Do you have anything, Connor?
Head to my website, I guess. That's where a lot of stuff's held right now. It's ConnorKvyacin.com. You can find the spelling of my name by headed to ST Radio Pod and looking in the description of the page. Give us a 5-star review. Like yourself. It's a big one. And write a review for the podcast. Email us. Just whatever. You know, the norm.
Yeah, do the thing.
Yeah.
So, thank you guys for listening. Check them out. Check me out. Check yourself out.
Check it out. Check it out.
Check yourself for moles. Okay. All right. We're getting out of here.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.